Good morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Authorities in Manila are looking into whether a bomb was responsible for that explosion aboard a Philippine Airlines plane at Manila Airport. Seven people were killed and more than 80 injured. Maggie Sterner has the latest.
Philippine Airlines officials are still combing the wreckage of the plane that exploded and caught fire. There were more than 100 passengers on the ill-fated flight, which was headed for an island south of Manila. Witnesses say as the plane was heading for the runway, there was an explosion. Most of those injured say it came from inside the plane, but they couldn't tell if it was from the cabin or the baggage area. One witness said it was hard to get out of the plane.
I could hardly get out because the smoke. Really, too much smoke.
Doctors at the hospital where some of the injured were taken say most people were hurt trying to escape from the flaming cabin. Philippine Airlines is still working to find out what caused the blast. Maggie Sterner for CBS News, Manila.
A West German Air Force military transport plane has crashed in flames near Lohr in northern Bavaria. All 10 aboard were killed. Texas Governor Bill Clements will inspect a Red River levee today and fly over the flooding Trinity River, now 6 to 10 miles wide as it pushes toward Lake Livingston in southeast Texas. Levees along the Red River are now said to be water-saturated, soft, and mushy. Gerald Palmore is with the Texarkana Emergency Management Agency.
Some of the people tried to stay as long as they could, and some left. That was mainly up to them, according to how they felt. We have had to evacuate some cattle out, airlifting them out, and we still got a lot of cattle stranded, a lot of farmland that's underwater.
And in Arkansas, officials say nearly 500,000 acres of wheat has been damaged by flooding and put the cost at close to $5 million. Up to 30,000 head of cattle have been stranded, many of those presumed to be drowned. President Bush is heading for Texas A&I University this morning and the first of three college commencement speeches he'll deliver this weekend on the theme of change in the world. He leaves behind a political uproar over the budget and taxes, sparked by his chief of staff, John Sununu. Correspondent Wyatt Andrews reports.
Sununu's remarks put the White House's credibility on the line. At the very moment the president was saying there are no preconditions for Tuesday's budget summit, Sununu anonymously told reporters, if the Democrats put tax increases on the table, it's our prerogative to say no, and I emphasize the no, end quote. Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell denounced that remark as evidence of bad faith.
It is a question of trust, of whether or not agreements are to be honored, of whether or not the administration is prepared to negotiate in good faith on this important matter.
Unusually, the president sent out his spokesman to disavow Sununu. Marlon Fitzwater said, we will consider every option that comes to the table. A senior White House official says the president will, in fact, accept new taxes, but only if he gets major concessions from the Democrats, including such reforms as a presidential veto over each item in the budget. To the extent that Sununu was saying that taxes remain the president's trump card, his remarks, while poorly timed, were not necessarily wrong. Wyatt Andrews, CBS News, the White House.
It's reported this morning Lithuania has begun pumping its own oil to offset the Soviet energy blockade. A radio journalist says the well in the northeast Kretinga region is now yielding 15 tons a day and that the potential is 460 tons a day. For the first time, federal prosecutors are using a 1988 law to seek the death penalty in a drug-related murder. The case centers on two Chicago men, one still at large, who are charged with murdering a federal witness to protect their $50,000-a-day drug ring. Justice Department spokesman David Runkle.
If cooperating witnesses are going to be assassinated to prevent them from testifying, as is alleged in this case, then we feel it's absolutely essential to have at our disposal the ultimate penalty.
It's been 27 years since a civilian has been executed in a federal case, and city council members in Minneapolis are moving now to prevent the federal government from seeking the death penalty there. Steve Murphy reports from WCCO.
The Minneapolis City Council today votes on a resolution opposing a federal law which allows the death penalty for certain drug-related homicides. Councilwoman Joan Campbell says the intent of her resolution is clear.
To avoid having someone receives the death penalty in the state of Minnesota.
Minnesota abolished the death penalty at the turn of the century, and Campbell says the 1988 federal law has no place in the state or the city. Under the resolution, the city's law enforcement officers would be urged to bypass federal prosecutors if the death penalty is proposed. Campbell says there are enough votes to pass the measure, which is the first such challenge to the federal law. Steve Murphy for CBS News, Minneapolis.
In San Francisco, public television station KQED has filed suit asking a federal court to order California's next execution to be televised. The station contends the policy barring journalists to witness executions from using cameras, recording equipment, sketch pads, and the like violates the First Amendment. There's a report this morning that Cuban leader Fidel Castro provided lawyers for Manuel Noriega with documents refuting charges that the former Panamanian dictator smuggled cocaine into the U.S. Miami attorney Frank Rubino told the Miami Herald he met with Cuban President Castro in March in Havana and was surprised when Castro disclosed he had met earlier with other Noriega lawyers to give them information to help their case. The Texas legislature is now in special session to address a school funding crisis. As Jan Darwin of KRLD Dallas reports, a major children's health care program is also at the point of bankruptcy.
The financial crisis in Texas government has reached the point where it may threaten young lives. The state program that provides funds for chronically ill and disabled children has run out of money. The program is supposed to care for children not covered by insurance or Medicaid. Sherry Irwin of Garland, Texas, found out her young son had cancer. During a very brief time, the family was without insurance.
The kind of cancer that my son had is a very rapid-growing cancer, and he didn't have much longer to live. And if we had had to go through a few days of arguing over, will you treat my son even though we don't have medical insurance, he would have died.
After June, as many as 16,000 seriously ill children in Texas will be unable to afford the care they need to stay alive. Jan Darwin for CBS News, Dallas.
Entertainer Sammy Davis Jr., suffering from throat cancer, is reported near death at his Beverly Hills home. Friends report his weight has dropped to 60 pounds. Pauline Frederick, longtime United Nations correspondent for NBC News and a trailblazer for women in broadcasting, has died in suburban Chicago. She was 84. Novelist Walker Percy has died of cancer in Covington, Louisiana. He was 73 years old. A 26-year-old Milwaukee woman has been arrested after a smoky house fire last night that killed four of her children and critically injured two others. Led by cheaper food and energy, wholesale prices fell in April for the second month in a row. But Morgan Stanley chief economist James Fralick is not cheering yet.
The report, while good news near term on the inflation side, suggests that longer term we could be looking at a little bit of a pickup in inflation as the industrial sector begins to bounce back.
Retail sales were down in April, a sharp 0.6%. The dollar continues to slide against the Japanese yen, but has gained ground against major European currencies. London gold prices are sharply lower on heavy Japanese selling, the morning fixing $368.25 an ounce. And on Wall Street, the Dow is ahead over 15 points at 2753.60. It's 7:10.